Thank you, thank you. What a beautiful song. What a great song. The old rugged cross, I will cling to the old rugged cross. We need to never forget what Jesus did on that rugged cross. 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. It's good to see Colin back for the weekend. And I know you're having a great time at college. Y'all had a huge win yesterday over Army, and a big win. Shocked everybody on that one. And so happy for y'all on that. And good to see you, man. Good to see you. All right. 2 Samuel chapter 11. Y'all ready to hear some preaching this morning? Amen. I hope that you are ready. I hope you're prayed up and ready to hear something from the Lord. 2 Samuel 11 is a very well-known chapter in the Bible. The story that it contains has yielded, to say tens of thousands of sermons, I don't believe would be an exaggeration. There's a small story inside of the larger story that we're going to focus on here. So let's pick it up in verse number 17. It says, "And the men of the city went out and fought with Joab. And there fell some of the people of the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. Then Joab sent and told David all the things concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, 'When thou hast made an end of telling the matters of the war unto the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise, and he say unto thee, Wherefore approached ye so nigh unto the city when ye did fight? Knew ye not that they would shoot from the wall? Who smote Abimelech, the son of Jerubbesheth? Did not a woman cast a piece of a millstone upon him from the wall, that he died in Thebez? Why went ye nigh the wall? Then say thou, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also.'" Now there's a big picture going on here, and most of you are aware of this. And you see the overall picture. This is a small story that is now inserted into a much bigger story. And it's a cautionary tale there found in verse 20 and 21. We know that Joab was a general, and that he was sent with instructions to put Uriah the Hittite in the front of the battle so that he would be purposely killed. And in order to do that, the battle plan was to send them to a place that was heavily guarded. We see that this resulted in what would be considered a huge gaffe in military planning. Joab was a very good general. And yet he knew when David heard of these people that were killed by the archers on the wall, that David's first response would be angry at him. And he would say, "Did you not understand that they would put archers on the wall to shoot at you? Why did you go so near that wall?" And when he asks you that, Joab tells the servant that's delivering the message to King David, when he gets angry that several of our soldiers are now dead, you simply say to him that Uriah the Hittite is dead. He'll understand, and that will end the conversation. He'll understand, "This is what I had to do to fulfill the orders that you gave me." I think it's so tragic that several innocent people lost their lives in the attempt to cover up David's great sin. You see how this thing spirals out of control quickly, quickly. But in this, we see an account, in the 11th book of 2 Samuel, we see an account of a war casualty that yields for us an important cautionary tale. Now, in this account, we see the death of an Israeli soldier named Abimelech. Now, it's a short two-verse record of how the soldier died here. There's a much greater account of it found in Judges chapter 9. And we see that the city that Israel was laying siege upon had a wall for their strategic protection. They had archers on the wall. And the closer you got to the wall, the more likely that that wall would bring death to you as a soldier. But we see the reason why Joab sent soldiers so close to it. It was to fulfill an evil plan, to cover up an evil sin. And we see that very clearly. Now, we see that Joab is sending this messenger to take the story of what happened to the king. He knows the king's going to be angry about it. He tells him what to do, and I've already explained that. He brings up a cautionary tale that would have been very well known to Israeli soldiers. That is the story of Abimelech. Now, Abimelech was the son of Gideon and was famously killed in battle. Abimelech went near the wall. He was going to go to the wall to set fire to it in a battle. And as he got so close to it, a woman was on top of the wall. She was able to take a millstone, a very heavy stone used to sharpen swords and knives and shears or whatever. And he was so close that she was able to peer over and drop that. And it came down and, of course, crushed him. He died in battle. The story in Judges 9 adds a little more to it than what we see here in 2 Samuel. We see that as he was lying there crushed by this millstone, that he recognized that it was the work of a very heroic woman who was on top of the wall during the battle, had the foresight to grab this and drop it down on him as he was planning to set fire. And, of course, he recognized that it was a woman, which, of course, was a horrible, horrible dishonor for a soldier, a warrior at this time, to be killed by a woman. So as he lay there dying, he asked one of his fellow soldiers to take his sword and run him through and kill him with the sword so that it would not be said that he was killed by a woman. Of course, his wounds were critical and terminal, and he would have died even before the sword. So you can see that even though he didn't want to be remembered as being killed by a woman in battle, we see the story replayed and being told, and in that story as it's retold, it is told that he was killed by a woman in battle by throwing a millstone on his head. How many of you saw that? You caught that? So even though he didn't want that, he didn't want to be remembered that way, it is what happened. And even though at the last moment he's going to try to wash it, fix it, it is what is rehearsed in history and what is remembered. He got close to the wall, and this woman threw this millstone on him and crushed him. Now, to me, it is very interesting that the story that is told by Joab here has two very real connections to the much bigger story that is happening in this chapter, the bigger story being the murder and cover-up of Uriah by King David to cover over his sin with Bathsheba. That's the bigger story. This is a smaller story inside of this, can even very easily be overlooked due to the ferociousness of the bigger story. But it's interesting to me that this story has two connections to the bigger story that is happening in the chapter. And in this chapter, we see that David is killing Uriah to cover over his great sin. So as we look at this, we see the wall. The wall represents the place of temptation that often we are drawn close to in spite of our training, our wisdom, our knowledge, and instincts. We see a wall here. He says, don't go near the wall. Why did you go near the wall? Don't go near the wall. There's death on that wall. Archers, women with big, big millstones, don't get near the wall. You'll get crushed. You'll get killed. So we see this cautionary tale that the soldiers are now reminded of. Don't go near the wall. Say that with me. Don't go near the wall. That wall is symbolic. It's a place of temptation that often we are drawn close to. And we are drawn close to it in spite of our training and the warnings and our instincts. And we see that wall mentioned here. I think about how David went near the wall. That day that he stepped out, saw Bathsheba. He went near the wall of temptation, didn't he? He got close to this thing, this place of death. But I also note that in this story, we see that a woman is the instrument that brings death to Abimelech. something very dishonorable for a warrior, a hard thing to have attached to your legacy. And we can clearly see a connection to what is happening in this bigger story with David. David went near the wall, a place of vulnerability and death. And we see in the story of David, a woman is the temptation that is going to bring about his demise. In David's case, a millstone is about to be dropped upon him. It's through the temptation of a beautiful woman. He went near the wall. He went near the wall. Y'all catching this? And on that wall, there was a woman of temptation. I'm not blaming Bathsheba, but she was the tool of temptation that day. And that millstone fell upon David and brought about much sorrow. Now, we see in verse number 20 that General Joab uses this story with the troops. He knows that every Israeli soldier is familiar with it. He knows that he has had to send men close to the wall. David is going to be very angry because, do we not remember what happened to Abimelech? Why did you go near the wall? Then he tells him to say, Uriah is dead also. Then David will understand. But we see that story as it has been presented to be a warning among the Israeli troops. Don't go near the wall. Stay away from the wall. And as a pastor, as your pastor, I want to encourage you to stay away from the walls of death that are all around you. There are walls that you must stay away from. You must mark and avoid the walls of vulnerability in your life. Sometimes these walls are represented as people in your life that you can't go near. Sometimes they're represented as places in your life that you cannot frequent. And sometimes they can even be things that can become walls of vulnerability in your life that can bring about death and destruction. Places where you will become an easy target for Satan. Don't go near that wall. A place where you can become crushed by temptation. You must identify the forts of Satan in your life. These forts are places of sin, places where you could be crushed and compromised, places that make you weak and vulnerable, prone to fall. I want you to hear the words of Solomon as he advises us in this verse. If you have your Bible, go to Proverbs chapter 4. We've got to watch out for these walls. Don't go near these walls. You've got to mark these walls in your life. Places where you become vulnerable. Joab knows David's going to look at this report and say, what in the world, Joab? Did you not have the common sense to know if you bring the troops near the wall that they're going to have archers and they're going to be shooting? Every soldier would know this. Why did you go near that wall? Well, there are walls where the devil has archers. We've got to be aware of these walls. Now, hear what Solomon advises us in Proverbs 4. Look at verse 14. Proverbs 4, verse 14. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it. Pass away. For they sleep not, except they have done mischief. And their sleep is taken away, unless they cause some to fall. There are people that you will encounter in life that will be like a wall of death, and you must not go near that wall. Is there anybody listening to me this morning? Amen. Listen to me, young people. The wrong crowd will kill you quickly. It'll kill you spiritually. It can kill you physically. I think of that verse, the tragic story of the man Amnon, the son of David, who committed a horrible, horrible sin. The verse starts out with his dilemma, his temptation to do something wicked. Then the next verse says, but Amnon had a friend. That friend encouraged him to do this wicked thing, and not only encouraged it, coached him in it. There are people that are walls of death. Don't go near that wall. We see Solomon describe people that don't rest unless they've brought damage to somebody's life. There are people out there that have an evil spirit about them. And you need to identify these people. You need to recognize that they are ready to drop a millstone upon your head if you get near their wall. Now hear what Paul wrote to the church at Corinth. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul writes this in verse 14. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14. He says this, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion," that's fellowship there, what communion, what likeness hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? The word Belial is evil. And what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Now notice what his advice is after pointing out the common sense questions that he proposes. Here's his advice to the church of Corinth, the Christians worshiping there. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. We see that the final solution is to get away from people who want to lead you astray. Get away from them. Don't go near that wall. There are walls of death all around us. We must mark them and not go near them. The wall could be identified as a place of temptation. There are some places that a Christian does not need to frequent. We don't need to be there. There are places where sin and temptation abounds, where it prospers, where it's not about if you're going to encounter temptation. The question is, what temptation are you going to encounter? Young people, there are places that you need to not go near that wall. You need to not go near that wall. There are places where there will be a millstone waiting for you at some point. There are environments that lend themselves to evil. And we need to not go near that wall. Sometimes it may be a place such as a bar. Maybe it'll be a friend's house where often evil is going on, where often things that could be damaging to your spirituality, maybe even your physicality. And the solution is, don't go near the wall. Don't go there. Don't be in that environment. Don't be under the wall where you can be crushed by the millstone. It's better to be far enough away where she can't throw the millstone versus being right underneath it where you got to worry about dodging the millstone. You understand? You realize this, when it comes to temptation, it is much better for you to avoid it than to battle it. Much better for you to avoid it, to run from it, to not pass by it, as Solomon tells us. It's much better for you to avoid the presence of it than to do battle in the presence of it. Don't go near that wall, that place of temptation. What are the places in your life of temptation? Sometimes it could be a place where the tempter could be somebody of the opposite sex. And if you hang out there, it could be bad for you, bad for your marriage. And you've got to mark that. That person in and of themselves may not be evil, but for you, that person could be a temptation. Does anybody know what I'm saying? Amen. And you've got to, on your own, make sure you're not underneath the wall waiting on a millstone to come down of temptation to crush you. That place of temptation. What is that place of temptation for you? That place that could tempt you away from the will of God. That place that could tempt you easily into a place of sin. That place that could hurt your reputation. That place where sin abounds. Don't go near that wall. Number two, that place, that wall, could be identified as a person of temptation. As we pointed out, there are people out there that the devil can use in our lives. There are people that can be a wall of death. Some people cannot be our friends, as they will present millstones that could crush us. Listen to me, Facebook has ruined a lot of marriages. Social media has ruined a lot of marriages. And I'll tell you why. People sidle up to X Flames and they go near that wall. Oh, we're just friends and we're going to talk a lot and we're going to be on these private chat rooms, but no, you're going near a wall you need to stay away from. Well, I think I can go have lunch with my secretary. Nothing will happen. You're going near the wall. You're going near the wall. Well, I think that although I'm a married woman, I can hang out with guys and go do social things alone with them because you know what? I'm strong enough to handle it. You're going near a wall that many have been crushed by millstones under. Don't go near that wall. Do you know that there are people that seek to pull us into their sin? I don't know why it's that way, but sin hates to be alone. It's not happy unless there's somebody sharing it with them. And often, when people hear that you do not engage in such sins, they become very motivated to pull you into it with them. I remember working in the workforce when I wasn't full-time at church. I remember when people would hear that I did not drink alcohol. It became literally a goal for about five of my fellow workers to get me to try my first beer with them. And it was every payday, every Friday. It was a thing that I went through every week with them. They'd beg me to go to a bar that was right there by the place. They all wanted to treat me to my first drink of alcohol. I'd made a promise when I was 12 years old at a church camp, Triple S Christian Ranch. Heard a message about our bodies and being the temple of God, and it was a strong message. It convicted me. I went forward. I got on my knees, and I promised God that I would never taste alcohol. And outside of, what is it, Vic's Formula 44D, and NyQuil, I can honestly say I've never put alcohol to my lips. Now, that doesn't make me, I don't say that to be boastful, but I made God a promise. I promised God I would never taste alcohol. And I cannot tell you the number of people, upon hearing that I have never had alcohol, have made it a personal goal to get me to break my promise to God and defile my body with the devil's brew. I don't know why it matters to them. I don't know why it's so important to them to get me to do that, but I have encountered that. And I've heard of young people being mocked for being virgins, being pure, and people that want to take that from them, not because they love them or seek a relationship with them. Somehow your virginity presents you to be superior to them. They can't stand the feeling they have around you of your superiority and your purity. And often people of that sort want to bring you down to their level. They can't stand the fact that you don't drink or you don't do drugs or you're not in illicit sex. So often, there's a pressure, and those people become the walls of danger in our life, seeking to drop a millstone on us. And we have to mark these kind of people. We have to stay away from them. Don't go near that wall, that person that every time you're with them is trying to find a way to get you to sin with them. To do something that's going to hurt you, draw you into something. That friend that every time you're with him, he's trying to get you to taste alcohol. He's a wall that you better get away from. Why go near the wall? Now, you go near the wall, you deserve what you get. A millstone dropped on you, an arrow through your throat. there's death on that wall. The key is don't get up near the wall and try to dodge all the arrows coming at you. Get away from the wall to a safe distance where they can shoot all they want. The fiery darts of the wicked, the Bible calls them. But you're out of range. You're out of range. Am I talking sense this morning? There are people that seek to pull us out of spiritual places. Beloved, they don't have to be drug addicts and alcoholics and people trying to get you to involve yourself in illicit sin with them. Sometimes they're just not spiritual. They resent you going to church because you make them feel bad every Sunday morning because they don't. So what do? You get around them, every chance they get, they try to pull you out. Every time they talk about why they quit church and why they hate church, and they mock you for going to church, and they try to pull you to a place of spirituality to match theirs. You better be careful going near that wall. There are people who resent you going to church, and they'll use every bit of their influence to discourage it. Every time you talk to them, they'll talk about your church in a negative way. Every time you talk to them, they'll talk about your pastor in a negative way. Every time you talk to them, they'll talk about spiritual things in a negative way, enticing you to get away from something that's so positive in your life. Maybe they had a negative experience, or maybe they got close to a wall that came down upon them. I don't know, but I have seen people pulled out of church because they went near the wall of people who were out of church, who regularly sought to get them to miss church with them. Don't go near that wall. You don't have to be mean to them. You don't have to be hateful to them. But you don't have to also allow them to pull you to where they're at. There are people that seek to pull us into sin. There's people that seek to pull us out of spiritual places. There are people that seek to reunite us with our old addictions. Is that a true statement? Now, I don't want anybody to raise their hand or nothing, but there could be people in here that are dealing with addictions. Maybe your drug of choice was alcohol. Maybe it was cocaine. Maybe it was heroin. Maybe it was marijuana. And since you got saved, you've been trying to clean that stuff out. You've been trying. Addiction is so hard. There's many bands that get on you. Sometimes you think you're getting away, and it's like that rubber cord that just stretches. At some point, it gets tighter and tighter. Before you know it, it's pulling you back. You ever seen those games where they have that cord attached to them? They got to try to run. And you watch them when they lose their footing, it just zips them right back. Addiction's much like that. And I've seen people who love the Lord and acknowledge that they got into this. Before they knew it, they were hooked into it. And I've seen them struggle and struggle and struggle and do good for sometimes even up to years and then have a bad day that leads to a bad 5 years. You understand? One of the hard things, there's that old saying, hurt people hurt people. And there's truth to that. And I've always believed that there could be a secondary thought there, that healed people can help people. Hurt people do hurt people, but healed people can help people. One of the hardest things, I worked for Orange County Corrections for a while as a counselor, and I worked with Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous in a group therapy setting where there were many convicts who were court-ordered. It was a part of their parole that they attend these meetings. They had to be at them. The reciprocation rate was unbelievable. How many of them would go through the program a year later, get arrested again for drugs, and be right back in the prison, right back in our program. They'd come through it. Many of them been through it 8 or 9 times, trying to beat their addictions. A lot of them, here was the problem. They would get clean. They'd get sober. They'd set in their heart, I'm going to do right this time. They'd get out, and they'd quickly, after they'd get out, go near the wall. And sometimes they went near the wall because they thought they were helping. I got friends that are addicts, and I was an addict, and I know how bad it hurts. And I want to go help them. I want to pull them out of being addicts. And you guys have heard the old, it's nothing new, nothing original. Boy, I tell you what, it's so much easier to pull somebody down than it is to pull them up. I mean, I can take somebody half my size and put them down there, and we can get into a tug of war where I'm trying to pull them up on the platform. Chances are good with their leverage and gravity working with them, they're going to pull me off before I pull them up. So often people go near the wall, and that wall is people who seek to pull them back into their old addictions. If you're an addict, let me give you a little word of advice. If you're dealing with addiction, don't go near the wall. You can't help the addict. I hate to say that, but you can't be around it. You can't be in a room with people doing lines when you used to do lines yourself. You can't be in a bar. Well, I'll just have a Coca-Cola, but I'll sit with my old friends in the bar while they drink. Don't go near that wall. Don't go near that wall. You got to stay away from it. There are people out there that encourage us to do wrong or even have an evil spirit. They encourage us to do wrong things. That friend that encourages you to cheat on your husband, that's a wall. You need to get away from that wall. That buddy that encourages you to cheat on your wife, he's just standing there with a millstone. He's going to drop it on your head. Get away from that wall. There are things, I pointed out that there are places and there are people, but there's also things that can be walls in your life. Things that might not be dangerous to some people, but for you, it's bad. Can y'all think of something in your life that would fall in that category? One time, I was preaching and a man came forward and he laid some season passes to the arena in Orlando where the Magic played. He laid some passes on the altar of the church. When he got up, he left them laying there and went back to his seat. Afterwards, the usher gave it to me and I went to him and gave them back to him. He said, "Preacher, I can't take those." He said, "I had to lay it on the altar." He said, "I'm going to tell you why. For me, it's been destructive. You see, I bought those passes. For 2 years, I've owned them. Renewed them this year. But," he said, "now there's something that I want to go to every Sunday. Every Sunday there's a tractor pull, a ball game. I can go to any of it. I bought passes for the arena. I can go to the ball games. I can go to the events." And he said, "I'll be honest, it's destroyed my spirituality." And he said, "I can't go to church and serve the Lord and have these passes in my life. I'm not strong enough. And for me, it caused me to get out of a spiritual walk." Now, there are people that can own passes and have the discipline that it wouldn't pull you out of your regular church attendance. But for him, it did. And it became a wall in his life that he needed to get away from. Could there be something like that for you? For some people, a bass boat would be bad for you. And if that's the case, you need to bring it to my house and park it there. Toys can be bad for us when they take us away from our service to the Lord and our faithfulness to the house of God. And for some people, a thing can literally become a wall that you don't need to go near. Now, it might not for other people, but for you, you have to discern that. Sometimes we must know ourselves and know that some things are a wall of death spiritually for us. Something that Satan could use to crush us if we get near it. Now, let me close with this thought. Why do we go near the wall? I think y'all catch the point of this. I think all of you see the common sense in it, and you can see the cautionary tale that's there. How many of you get it? You get that point. Why'd you go near the wall? Don't go near the wall. There's death on the wall. Don't you remember what happened to Abimelech? Joab knows that David's going to see his strategy and point out that, because their training taught them to stay away from the wall. And yet he violated that, but it was to fulfill David's wishes. So he said, you got to remind him why I did it before you get mad and have me executed. Why do we go near the wall? I've been a pastor now. I've been a minister for 36 years. 7 years of that was as a youth pastor. The rest has been as a pastor. I've seen people go near the wall. Good people. People who love the Lord. People who were dedicated. People who are now cautionary tells. Brother Stevens, you know what I'm talking about. People you've pastored that they serve a purpose as an example now. Maybe their stories, just like Abimelech, has been repeated to hopefully keep other people from repeating that. I don't know about you, but I don't need any more stories. I got enough to take me the length of my lifespan. People I've seen go near the wall. And I always wonder, why did you go near the wall? Why did you do that? Did you not see the archers? Did you not see the woman hoisting the big millstone above you? Well, here's the quick reasons why we end up going near the walls. If you end up under the wall, this is why you did it. One of these reasons will be why you did it. Number one, arrogance. Arrogance is the number one reason why we end up near that wall. We think we're strong enough to handle it, sharp enough to handle it. Bad things don't happen to people like me. Other people, less intelligent people, get in trouble. Proverbs 16, verse 18 warns us that pride goeth before destruction and an haughty spirit before a fall. There's been a lot of people end up underneath a millstone because of their arrogance. They thought that they could handle it. They thought that they were strong enough, sharp enough. Only idiots get crushed by the millstones. Abimelech was no idiot. He was the son of one of the greatest generals in Israel's history. But he got crushed by a millstone. The second reason, if you go by the wall, if you end up near it, underneath it, second reason would be classified as simplicity that leads to carelessness. In other words, you were not sober. You were not careful. Maybe you were simple. Maybe you lacked wisdom. You lacked knowledge. But in any case, you ended up underneath the wall of Satan. Hear what is said by Peter. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be sober. The word sober means be careful, be alert, be awake. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Yeah. Listen to what also Solomon wrote in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 7. He says, and I beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. Now, we're going to skip down to verse number 21, but in the middle we see this young man as he is beguiled by a beautiful woman who pulls him in using temptation. We see it as in that story for time's sake. In verse 21, we pick it back up. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth through the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare and knoweth not that it is for his life. We see a young man here that Solomon beholds who is simple. He says he's a man that's simple. He's void of understanding. This woman comes to him with her words and her flattery. She entices him. He doesn't understand that she's going to strike a dart through his liver. That he's like a bird that thinks the the food that's there, the seed, is a treat, not realizing it's a snare. Because of the simplicity. And many people go to the wall because of their simplicity. It leads them to carelessness, a lack of sobriety. There's a third reason people end up by the wall. They're being set up by Satan's snares. We see a reference to that with the bird being caught in a snare. Listen to what 2 Timothy 2, verse 22 says. This is Paul advising a young preacher. He says, "Flee also youthful lusts, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace, with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. But foolish and unlearned questions avoid, knowing that they do gender strifes. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient." Now catch this. "In meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves." Well, I find that phrase interesting. Those that oppose themselves. What do you reckon that means? Those that oppose. What's another way of saying that? Could it be that maybe another way of saying that, those that are their own worst enemy? Is that ever, listen, I have fallen in that category. There's times I've been my own worst enemy. Who's with me on that? Don't get so pious out there. There's times that I have done things that opposed me. It opposed me, violated me. Notice this, if God peradventure will give them repentance, to the knowledging of the truth. We see that, I believe when I copied that, I left off part of that. We see that in that, he talks about people that are taken captive by Satan at his will. Let's go there to it. Let's go to 2 Timothy 2. That's a very important part of it. Maybe I didn't copy it correctly. Let's go there. 2 Timothy 2. There we are. Yeah, I cut it off with the most important verse. Can you believe that? Here we go. Look at verse number 26. This is the verse that went with the point that I was going to give to you. And that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his, what's that word? Did you know that Satan has a will for you? We talk about God's will. Do you think most people are in God's will? So apparently there's two wills for your life. The devil lays snares, entrapments, enticements, walls, as our lesson today is putting it. Don't go near the wall. And often you're being set up by Satan's snares. Listen to me, that wall could be an enticement that Satan is putting there to draw you near the wall. Not every opportunity that comes to you is of God. It takes discernment. Not every thing that looks great is good. Satan puts things there to draw us to a place of danger in our life. Now, lastly, why do people go near that wall? Our own lusts and desires draw us to the walls of death. We got no one to blame but ourselves because it comes from an internal place. James talks about this. He teaches us in James 1, verse 13. He says, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted," catch this, "when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed." Often it's our own lust and desires that draw us to the walls of death. I went to Canada a number of years ago to go bear hunting. We sat through a training session, gave us some things to prepare us for going out into this wilderness area with live bears, and they were then hunters killed there. They shared a couple of cautionary tales. One of the things he told me that I remembered was that he said, the minute you walk in the woods, the bears that inhabit or frequent that are aware that you're there. He explained that the bear has a nose that is, I forget, I think 20 times stronger than a bloodhound. In fact, it is considered to have the best nose of any animal that inhabits the forest. He said, no matter what you do, when you climb up into that stand, that bear knows you're there. It's completely aware that you're there. No matter how much camouflage you wear, it knows you're there. But he said, don't be discouraged. That bear may sit out there for several hours and watch you. You can't see it, but it can see you, and it knows you're there. But he said, here's the reality. Its stomach will win out over its instincts. And it will come in because it wants the donuts. And it wants the raw fish, the beaver tail that we stuck in that barrel. It's aware of you. It knows you're there, but it smells that food. And the enticement of that will draw it to the wall where the hunter is waiting. And when it's in range, death will be delivered. A lot of times what happens to us is our stomach wins out. You see, David stood on that balcony, saw a woman that he knew was married, and he knew her husband. He knew he was also married. But he saw, he desired, then he took. Are you with me?
Yeah.
And we can be all hard on David, but we've done it too.
Yeah.
We've saw, and we've desired, and our belly won out over our instincts, and we went near the wall. Don't go near the wall. Why went you near the wall? Don't go near the wall. I'll close with this, my last thought. When I was a young youth pastor, a young lady in our church asked if she could have a counseling session. The secretary scheduled one with me, and I met with her. After the very first meeting I had with her, she shared some things that made me very uncomfortable. She shared some things that led me to believe that she was dangerous and that her intentions were not spiritual, but that she was seeking to be a temptress. I finished that meeting. About 2 weeks later, she asked for another meeting, and I declined it. I didn't accept it, didn't meet with her. We had another minister in our church who then she met with, and she had a meeting with him. He came to me a little bit later and asked why I didn't grant her a second meeting. I shared with him my instincts on the matter, and I said, brother, she's trouble. She's trouble. You better watch yourself. About 6 months later, I went to see that brother. But not at his house. He was on staff just as I was. He was the college and career director. I was the youth pastor. I went to see him, and he was at a friend's house where he had now moved to because he had engaged in a horrible sin with this woman, wrecked his marriage, lost his daughter, lost his wife. As I visited with him, he shared with me his regrets. As I left, I thought to myself, why'd you go near that wall, man? I warned you. I told you. I could see the millstone above her head. But the truth is, he thought he could handle it. Beloved, there's walls out there. You better stay away from them. And I'll tell you this in love. Tell you this in love. We don't need any more cautionary tales. We got enough. Let's bow for a word of prayer.